seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
You're welcome along. It's an end-of-year Golf Weekly Merry Christmas special. We are crammed into the Spin 103.8 News Studio. That's the news studio, which means that our knees are basically touching. It's Dave McIntyre who stepped in manfully. Hello, Dave.
Hello.
Sharing a microphone with Nathan Murphy.
How are you?
On a scale of 1 to 10, how uncomfortable is this?
Fine. We've been close before.
I've no problem being this close to Nathan Murphy.
I'm going to move that mic just a touch. This is going above and beyond, listeners. This is...
The Spin News Studio was not built for Golf Weekly.
No, or three people.
All in the spirit of Christmas.
Fionn Davenport will join us from Manchester via Skype to give us some of his highlights of the year. That's basically what we're doing here. It's the 21st? Second?
Today is the 21st.
Ah,
yes.
Okay, there we are. So Christmas is upon us. Any interesting plans for Christmas? Out of the ordinary plans, what do people tend to do?
Staying in my house.
Great.
Having Christmas dinner there.
Yeah.
You're talking to lads of... very young children here.
Okay. Be a lot of excitement Christmas morning.
Oh yeah,
there will be. Santa will be there.
And children are old enough to get Santa.
Yeah, mine definitely are now. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, my eldest is definitely waiting every day. He's thinking, "Is today? Is he coming today? No. Four more sleeps. I'll put him to bed tonight. Is he coming today? No. Three more sleeps. So we're getting there.
That's kind of nice.
It is.
That's nice.
I went to visit Santa on Monday in Malahide Castle, and fair play to him. He said to the kids, "You do know the Santa rule, don't you? So when your mommy and daddy ask you to do something between now and Christmas, you just do it straight away. You don't say, 'I'll do it in a minute.'" Ever since.
No.
Do you want me to make a list of things you want me to do between now and Christmas so I can...
Wow.
Stay true to the Santa rule. I'm like, wow.
How can we extend the Santa rule into the new
year?
Well,
you do try it.
That's interesting. Because I must say, I'm at a stage now where there are no kids around the family. The Malloy family is childless. We're all too old.
Is this a sad tale?
Not really. It's an understanding. We're in a phase. You know, I'm sure that those days are around the corner. But you do miss the absolute euphoria of a child on Christmas Day, I find. We've probably had about 10 years now without that.
Mm.
And there's something mad about a young person losing their mind, which brings you along for the ride a little bit. Like, how excited can me and my two brothers in their late 20s get, really, you know?
and your hungover brothers.
You know what I mean? Like,
will we just not get each other anything this year?
It's been said. And, you know, it's like, all right, happy Christmas. Oh, yeah, no, happy Christmas.
Yeah, no, it is true. Just it brings you back to what Christmas used to be like when you were a kid.
Yeah, it's really
and the magic of that couple of hours on Christmas morning when Santa's been and gone and there's a load of stuff there they weren't expecting.
Yeah, fun times. Okay, Everyone have a lovely Christmas. So, Fionn will be along later on. He's given a long list of highlights. Do you, Nathan, want to read out some of his highlights and therefore we can avoid repetition?
Fionn's highlights and lowlights.
What's it going to leave us with?
Has some,
it's a comprehensive.
Well, we can go through them. So he went for Justin Thomas at Quail Hollow as one of his highlights.
Oof, not for me.
Forgettable.
Which list was that?
That was number one in his list of highlights, lowlights.
I don't think it's a ranked first
it,
to
it
last
does also
order.
Bring into question. It seems as though the Sky are going to keep the Masters.
Yeah.
Which is very important.
Yeah.
Because we saw what happened with the PGA. It was an unmitigated disaster.
If you were watching on BBC, it was.
Yeah. But even I didn't like the...
Yes, which is what the vast majority of people
were watching. Well, there were other places to watch that tournament.
Yeah. I would like to have seen if that tournament had been on Sky, would I have got more into it? I felt a disconnect with that tournament that I haven't felt for a major in some time.
Well, it felt like... And I did flick between that and the coverage on air as well. But it certainly did feel as though... that Justin Thomas was this massive outsider on the BBC coverage. Nobody's ever heard of this guy. Won the first two tournaments of the year already and said one of the great PGA Tour seasons of the past decade. But yeah, I don't think I would have Justin Thomas at Quail Hollow. It was a major season very much split in two in that the Masters and the Open were two of the great majors of recent times and the other two were just so forgettable.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with what Justin Thomas and Brooks Koepka did.
Sure.
But it was boring, whereas the other two were. Like, the Masters, for me, was as good as it gets.
Mm. That back nine came alive. You forget the back nine.
But you forget the 18th, where you feel Sergio's blown it. Like, again, like, Sergio has a putt, what was it, 6 feet to win the Masters?
Yeah.
And he blows it.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. And like on the, it's the 13th par 5 where Sergio goes into the trees with his tee shot. Like at that point, it's a case of how many shots is Justin Rose going to win the Masters by?
Yeah, you all, think it's gone then?
All tension was gone. And for it to suddenly reignite the way it did, Sergio scrambles really well in that hole. And then it was, I think we got about 2 hours of unbelievable sustained tension.
Well, Rose choked, really, in a lot of ways, because he threw a couple of bogeys in, was it on 16 and 17, that allowed Sergio to be, with, albeit playing brilliant golf, to get himself back to where they were level going down the 18th. And all the story and the narrative was obviously about Sergio winning his first major at the 164th, 172nd attempt, whatever the number was at the time. It was etched in our brain matter at the time.
Definitely not the, the 160th. Would make it 40 years of playing every major.
Okay. Right, well, whatever. 99 to 17. So that's 18 by 4. Somebody do 18 by 4 very quickly. 72. 72. Maybe it was 72. I don't think he's missed any majors in the meantime. thanks for clarifying that before our listeners had to clarify
you out
for
then
me.
I was thinking, wait a second. No, this definitely doesn't make sense.
I'd rather
sense.
You clarify it and not the Golf Weekly listeners. So yeah, say whatever it was, 72nd. Yeah.
Big number.
That was. That completely overshadowed the fact that Rose, he imploded really in a lot of ways.
Even the tee shot on the first playoff hole, where when it went to the playoff, and with Sergio having missed the putt again, you sort of sensed
shoulder slumped.
This is all on Rose. He's just such a solid player. Like he doesn't choke. That's not what Rose does. He just plods along and he wins big tournaments and he wins 4 or 5 of them a year. Like his tee shot on the first playoff hole, like killed him
into the trees.
Pretty much ended it there and then.
Yeah. I'd say he loses sleep about that.
I'd say he was just it's more devastating to lose the Masters because of everything that goes with it. And one of the things I'm sure that Garcia would have thought about in the weeks after is that I'm going to get to play the Masters now till I'm 60-odd.
And he never has to go anywhere without wearing his green jacket.
No, there's the jacket and there's all the stuff that goes on in the build-up to the tournament, to the Champions dinner and the par 3 stuff and all of that. And you know that I've read books written... many golf books where they talk about the Masters, they're talking about the majors, and you've got guys having to go and qualify for the Masters that would have been playing in it. Like Ernie Els, for example, will not play in the Masters next year.
Harrington
not playing the Masters. You win it and all of that goes away and you can play golf at Augusta into your old age.
Yeah.
I'm certain that is something Justin Rose has thought about since April.
Champions dinner. It's definitely the one I would want to win. I mean, okay, if the Open is the greatest test of golf, I'll have to bow to people who know more than me who say that, but I know if I could win one major... For what it means for your career, recognition around the world, and the fun stuff, the Champions Dinner and all that jazz, it's Augusta.
It's also the easiest major to win when you've actually gone and won one. Like, there's a good tradition of people winning more than one Masters because it's such a small field.
Mm.
And if you've shown you can win it once, you know you can play the golf course. So, like, Sergio's also looking ahead to the next 25 years going, I'm going to have probably
another chance or two,
four chances at minimum to win this again.
Yeah. So I agree. I mean, it was amazing. And it was such a brilliant start to the major season. And nobody had really talked too much about Garcia any more than they usually would in the previous 172 attempts. So we rolled into Birkdale. And look, you don't need to rehash to our listeners what happened, obviously.
Well, the US Open was between the two.
Oh, well, that says it all that I forgot that. We're doing highlights. We don't spend time on the boring stuff.
So,
Brooks Koepka didn't hit more than, a 7 or 8 iron?
Mm.
So, you know, what do you
say? It was sublime golf, though. Oh, studio's falling apart. It was unbelievably good golf.
A phone just fell off the wall there. Don't try and ring the Spin newsroom with an emergency.
Some breaking entertainment news.
I think that's been lost in some ways because it was so boring and because he didn't have a challenger for the last four holes. The incredible golf that he played to go out and win his first major.
I'm trying to lose it, let me.
but is it not that, like, and so Brooks is... If Justin Thomas is sort of your more boring version of Jordan Spieth, Brooks is your more boring version of Dustin. And Dustin isn't exciting. It's just his sort of dimness means that anything is possible at any stage. Whereas Koepka has the same game and is probably a more rounded individual. So there's nothing particularly standout-ish about Brooks Koepka.
That's very nice insight from Nathan, I thought there. I agree with all that. And I never thought that before. It's an amazing moment when someone says something that you thought all along without knowing. Dave, you disagree?
I don't really have a thought on it either way.
This is some great stuff we're bringing today.
Dave's having a Koepka moment or a Dustin moment.
I'm just thinking,
I don't know.
You could argue that everything you said is true, but...
As you can tell, couldn't be bothered.
As you can tell, listeners, we're bringing you some of our best
stuff
today.
I think that, yeah, the big part is that I just couldn't be arsed commenting on it.
Right, fine. We'll move on then. The US Open, Rory missed the cut with the other thing. I mean, the Rory...
The top three of the world missed the cut.
Jason Day...
Dustin Johnson.
Okay. It wasn't a great course either.
Well, the best part of the US Open was Kevin Na's video on the Wednesday at Erin Hills, where he was trying to feign an aggressive attempt to hack his way out of the fescue.
Like Mr. Burns. How are you going to hit that ball? You'll never hit it. His caddy was such a douche, his lick arse as well. How are you going to hit it? You can't hit it.
Oh, piss off, Kevin.
If we ever update the intros thing, that's going in.
Oh, yeah.
No, well, we're going to leave the other Kevin Na clip in there.
We
put them back to back.
So, it was amazing golf. Top three missed the cut. I mean, Rory's injury, that's when you realised this season was going off the rails for Rory, when he came back from the ribcage injury for US Open, missed the cut, and you were like, it's going to be another one of those years, which ultimately it proved to be. So, that's all we have to say about Rory. Except that Peter Lowry a couple of weeks ago said that his current retreat is the real deal. He's working very, very hard. Fingers crossed. Because, as we've said so many times, there's always something with Rory.
Hmm.
Equipment change.
It does look
change,
less likely that there injury. Will be one of those exceptional circumstances that affect his season.
Yeah.
That, you know, he's...
We said that about 10 times over the last
two
years.
But, you know, you think the equipment change is... You would have hoped that it's bedded down, that the injury is bedded down, that the... personal life is sorted.
Bet it down.
That his managerial situation is sorted. Mm-hmm. So unless it's something that comes completely out of left
freak
field.
Freak injury is the only thing.
Yeah,
or not even freak injury, just a reoccurrence. That even with the break, he hasn't been able to get everything right. Yeah. He's playing an incredible amount of golf. Like, it's something to be excited about.
I know.
He's playing, what, 7 of 8 weeks around the Masters?
And every time I go onto social media, he's practicing. I know that can be deceptive, but it looks good, you know. And Peter Lowry
on my Facebook account, I'm having a great time all the time.
Yeah, well, that's
true. Doesn't mean my life's like that, Joe.
No.
It's quite sad, actually.
So Birkdale. I mean, I think are we agreed that's everyone's highlight, that final round?
For me, it's still Garcia.
Wow!
Despite the fireworks of Birkdale and the astonishing finish,
I thought this was a no-brainer.
It's only because I've seen Spieth win two majors. To see Garcia win a major for me was always going to be top the list, no matter what came after that.
Wow,
it was that was one of the of all the Masters Sundays I've watched in the last 25 years, that was definitely in the top two or three.
Also, for the Masters, I was down in Galway watching it in a pub, having a couple of pints, and I was in a very relaxed state of mind. Whereas for the Open, I was on my holidays and my children were running around in front of me, so I wasn't being able to fully appreciate the greatness.
That stuff can affect
your enjoyment. Your enjoyment.
Typically, we're working. On Open Championship Sunday.
Yeah.
I didn't see Clark win it.
I didn't see upset about that.
Yeah.
Maybe that explains the line of questioning.
Well, he won his... Oh, yeah, I was going to say he won his own long before that. It was the week before that. And I didn't
Did
see McIlroy
win
it.
The Open?
So it's... In the noughties, I found it difficult to get as into the Open as I would the Masters because I'm just not seeing enough of it. Mm. But I did see that final six holes of madness.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, so what was it? 3 over through the first four holes, wobbling, level at the 13th, and then the 30-minute bogey. It's the greatest bogey we'll ever see.
Mm.
The pressure, the composure. It's his composure. Like you said in an off-the-ball panel, which will go out on Saturday live, I feel like you will say this.
You preempt what I'm going to say. You know me better than I know myself.
I feel like you might say something like...
Well, I will say it now that you've brought it up.
Yeah, Jordan Spieth knows the rules better than half the officials.
Yeah. And it wasn't...
Is that what you're going to say?
That is what I'm going to say. And like we've seen that throughout the year, mm-hmm. but most noticeably. But also, so he knew the rules better than the officials. He also knew how to take as much time as possible
to
try and compose himself.
I was just going to say
if that was the other way...
Yeah.
There's no... Kuchar would have completely capitulated. I think the vast majority of golfers would have just capitulated.
I know. I would have gone to pieces. I would have been like, oh my God, the TV audience, there's so much pressure.
He knew he was going to pieces.
Yeah.
He had the wherewithal and the awareness to realise, I am falling apart here.
Mm.
So let's just take all of this situation as regards the European Tour trucks and the drop zone area and the line of sight, and we'll allow that to just accumulate some time to get the rule right. But by the time we're sorted, everything will have calmed down, the heart rate will have come down, the caddy will have had time to figure it out. I think that's the most important part, that he had the awareness of how the wheels were coming off. Let's use this to just screw them back on. And by the time this is done, we might get out of this alive.
It's easy to look back in hindsight when he's won the tournament and think it was a moment of genius the way he, and was a moment of incredible awareness. Mm-hmm. But he's won, what, three majors now? So
going
for the Grand Slam next year. If he goes to seven or eight, you do wonder, do we look back at that moment and go, well, that, like, his career could have collapsed there. Suddenly we're looking at somebody who has blown up a Masters, who's already blown up a previous Open Championship, has done it again. Like, someone who, with all his talent, has still thrown away more majors than he's won. Mm. Whereas now, again, we're like probably asking the question, is he going to win more majors than McIlroy? Mm-hmm. Right now, you would probably say 60-40 in Spieth's favour. Mm-hmm. So I just think his entire career possibly changed on that hole.
Yeah, 5 under through the last 5 holes. Johnny Miller.
Astonishing golf.
Johnny Miller says it's the greatest back nine stretch he's ever seen in a major. Like, when you think, like, Miller is a tough old git to impress. Like, somebody had the audacity to break his record at the British Open this summer.
Brandon Grace shot a 62.
And he was like, conditions were good. You know, he's not overly generous.
But he wasn't on a Sunday.
He recognises greatness, though. And like the speed thing for me, whew. I mean, maybe because I was watching it. I was working here, but there was a match on. I was able to really watch it. And I was drained afterwards. And how the 18th was just a procession, I don't know. But I mean, by the 18th, they had it won. It was done. Kuchar was a bit shell-shocked.
He played
good golf.
It was one of those moments where you love doing a golf podcast and loving golf because you're watching it wishing that, and hoping that everybody else gets this.
Yeah.
Like, I remember when he didn't win the Open, the year Paul Dunne was leading heading into the final round when Zach Johnson won it in the playoff, sitting around the office on the Monday when it was finished, and it looked as though Spieth was about to win. And you're like, trying to get people, we're watching absolute sporting genius here.
Yeah. This is Ben Hogan. This is unprecedented.
And you get that sense when you're watching Spieth, you're like, you want everybody to get what we get about Spieth.
Yeah, totally.
So he was going for the three majors in a row there, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And you still couldn't get the message across.
What? There was still a...
It's the enormity of this situation.
It's an impenetrable wall when it comes to golf out there. So Fionn Davenport will weigh in now. We'll touch on the Irish players and obviously chat a bit on Tiger, I suppose, what needs to be said at this stage. But Fionn Davenport from Manchester coming up with his highlights and lowlights. Fionn Davenport, come on in.
Hey, lads.
How's Christmas in Manchester?
Well, it's all right. It's all right.
Oh, he's homesick.
It's
good.
It's raining, isn't it?
I'll be home on Christmas Eve, though, you know.
Where is home for Christmas. Where is home these days? Dublin.
Well, I'm going to my brother's in Dunshaughlin.
Don't say it
in,
like that.
Meath.
Don't say it like
Sorry,
that.
Sorry, no, I'm delighted.
My brother's.
Yeah. So my brother and my parents are coming from Italy. It's a big family gathering, so it'll be nice.
Great, very good.
So we're obviously tight on time, so Fionn, you might literally only have time to read through your highlights and lowlights. Fionn doesn't do things by half. The WhatsApp came through. He wants to talk about Justin Thomas at Quail Hollow, Spieth at Birkdale, Sergio, the emergence of John Ram, LPGA dress code nonsense, Muirfield shift, Stacey Luce at Portland, Hurricane Harvey, Lexi Thompson, oh, and Tiger.
There you go.
Where are you going to start?
Highlights and lowlights of the year. Well, I'll start with Jordan Spieth at Birkdale. Jordan Spieth, just to have a 3-shot lead going into the last day and to start bogey, 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 or whatever it was, with 3 bogeys in the first few holes. And then, of course, he's tied on 8 under in the 13th, comes to the 14th, and then, you know, cements his legend, I think. I thought that was the highlight of the year. That was, I think, the best I've seen in golf. In what was otherwise not a stellar year, it was good. There was no, like, unbelievably outstanding thing that happened other than that. I thought Sergio winning the Masters was wonderful. I thought it was a brilliant story. Justin Thomas, there's an interesting one. Is like most of us probably wouldn't have known a lot about Justin Thomas before, say, last season. But the fact that his dad was there, who's a PGA pro, his granddad was a PGA pro, and you can only imagine this is a family that dreamed of winning a major. And to see the third generation of Thomases actually fulfill that dream, and for the father and son, the hug that they gave each other on the 18th, I thought that was a really nice moment.
Did you? Funny, that was a low light for me, that whole PGA.
Really?
Just drab. Yeah. Couldn't get into it. Didn't feel any emotional connection with Justin Thomas or his presumably lovely family. And then the Peter Alice stuff. The whole thing just felt unbecoming of a major for me.
Well, maybe I'm looking at it in hindsight, and because I read about the father and grandfather the day after, so all right. of a sudden it took on a poignancy that, like you said, that mightn't have had during play. I mean, no more so than Brooks Koepka winning the US Open, which I thought was, I mean, it was fine. I mean, fair play to Brooks Koepka, and he was impressive, but I was bored. There was nothing in it. Mm. I thought the Open and the Masters were the better, for reasons we've already stated. And it was an interesting one, is that at the beginning of the season, you probably wouldn't have held out for any of these things to happen. Dustin was on fire. Then he slips just before the Masters and kind of puts pay to his season. Yeah. Hideki Matsuyama was like on course to be player of the year. Mm. Like the first half of the season, he was just unbelievable and then disappears. So Justin Thomas obviously emerges and wins that title.
We won't mention Matsuyama again, I suspect, but they say his final round at the Players was the best final round a lot of really clever golf people have seen, so that's just worth the mention.
Okay. Yeah.
Is there a direct correlation in Hideki Matsuyama's season between being the player of the year and then going to the toilet at the Irish Open and being confronted by Joe Molloy as he emerged?
Is Joe trying to give him some swing tips? It was like, have you ever noticed that your head moves just a little bit here?
Don't take that pause at the top.
Yeah, I just said, well...
looks ridiculous. Looks silly. Frankly, no. You're an embarrassment.
I literally said, welcome to Ireland and you're completely off plane. Nobody knows what plane means either. So
he doesn't speak English either.
He does.
And
does
his
he?
English is rubbish.
His English was perfectly...
Very poorly.
He's a Maurizio Pochettino. He doesn't like to speak in public because he gets a little bit nervous.
I'm not saying it was Oxford's finest, but he was able to tell me he was very happy to be in Ireland and he was planning to stay on and play the next day. Didn't invite me, but he was staying on. Yeah. John Rahm's good.
Yeah, John Rahm, the emergence of John Rahm that he won the DB, that was great. In terms of lowlights, and I realise that you're tight against time. Okay, so two of them are actually LPGA related. The first one is that maybe it's because when we were on that prolonged hiatus at some point during the summer because everybody was busy doing other things, so never really covered it. The dress code thing, it was just insane. Just to remind any listeners so in early July, the LPGA issued this directive about dress code. So, and you have to see this in the context of where the men's game is becoming looser finally, where all of a sudden Ricky Fowler can wear high tops and you don't have to wear collars anymore. And it's just about everybody just relaxing and getting with the zeitgeist of the modern age. All of a sudden, the LPGA issues this directive. And I have it here, okay? And so it says, plunging necklines are not allowed. And the not is in capital letters. Leggings, unless under a skirt or shorts, are not allowed. Capital letters again. Length of skirt, skirt, and shorts must, capital letters, be long enough to not see your bottom area, even if covered by undershorts at any time, standing or bent over. Joggers are not allowed. So it's this capitalization of all the knots, the phrases, the dated phrases like plunging necklines and bottom area. It actually begs the question.
This sounds so
this is like it's an audiobook of 50 Shades of Grey.
It's like literotica.
Do you suspect, Fionn, that these were put on pen to paper by a man?
I would suggest that they were, but the LPGA just, and in this age of hashtag Me Too and of growing awareness of the gender gap and a sense that, you know, that there's, like, we live in these times that the LPGA just has to be so tone deaf. Now, golf generally is fairly tone deaf, but this just struck me as just a stupid, stupid thing to do and reflects the kind of, you know, the fact that women golfers are second-class citizens in the golf world, and not just because less people watch the game. It's they're treated differently. They're treated like skivvies. It's almost as though the tone of this suggests that you should be grateful to to be playing professional golf. That's what that tone says to me.
Is the flip side of the argument, Phil, not that female golfers with plunging necklines and showing their bottom areas takes away from their actual prowess as international athletes and golfers?
It sounds worse when you say
it. It definitely sounds far worse than Dave says it.
And that they don't want to they don't want these top female golfers to be objectified.
Okay, well, here's the thing, right? Can anybody point to any female golfer that was guilty of such an offence? No.
But also, they don't have to wear them. So
I'm merely playing devil's advocate.
I know, it's sort of like Ricky Fowler wearing the high tops. Why does he wear them? He thinks he looks cool. He wants people to notice them.
Yeah.
Maybe it's 10% who want to wear the low-cut tops.
And here's the thing. It's just that, like, surely in the modern age, in 2017, like, within the constraints of your wearing sporting attire, like, to have the organization tell you, like, can you imagine if you said it to a man, like, oh, no, you cannot show any chest hair?
I would be all for that.
I know you would be, but that's because you're a conservative boy from Kildare, Joe. And, you know, but like my point is this. Can you imagine the ridicule that a directive like that would be met?
I guess it's slightly tricky because those options, in real terms, aren't really open to men. You know, like, what's Bubba Watson going to wear? He's not going to wear a
what's he going to do? Vest. Use a pink ball?
It does seem overly prescriptive.
What's a skirt?
A skirt is a skirt that's actually with the shorts underneath. It's not actually a skirt.
Okay.
Which is the most common attire for female golfers, because it's allows you to, like, to make a full turn. You're comfortable. You're not worried about anything, and you're not wearing like a tight pair of shorts or anything like that. So you have, like, anyway, it's the classic attire of the female golfer. However, the other one is kind of the Lexi Thompson at the A&A, like, and I know we discussed this, the four shot penalty for what in my mind is just pure cheating. I mean, she cheated. And then, even though she was golfer of the year and she had an outstanding season, that little miss putt on the tour championship, that was another kind of high low light. However, there is a highlight in the women's game, and it's Stacey Lewis. Now, I remember seeing this at the time, and again, just because I'm a golf junkie, so I'll just turn on any golf and watch it until my eyes weep and I can watch no more. And I was watching, and so Stacey Lewis wins in Portland.
I should say at this point, Fionn WhatsApped recently to say he can't get enough of the Trilby Tour.
We all ignored that.
Oh, my God. Sorry.
we felt it was a sad moment in Fionn's life.
That was
and
just a step
shouldn't
too
reinforce
far.
It.
Well, I'm going to actually finish on the Trilby Tour. Okay. So if you just pause
that. We're out of time. We're out of time.
The Trilby Tour is amazing. Anyway, Stacey Lewis, who, and all of a sudden there's this big emotional outpouring on the last in Portland. And then only is it explained that before the tournament, she said she was going to donate any winnings that she had to hurricane relief for the hurricane that hit Houston. She's from Houston. She grew up in Houston. Her husband is golf coach at the University of Houston. And she hasn't won in 3 years. So all of a sudden she wins and donates all of her winnings, $195,000, to hurricane relief. And then the LPGA Tour say that they're going to, or the title sponsor of the event, my apologies, the title sponsor say they'll match the funding. So, you know, that's she good. Wins. It was kind of and $400,000. So I thought that was a really nice moment. And then what else did I have? Oh, yeah, Muirfield switching a stance was neither a high nor a low light. It's no more than they should have done. It was stupid what they did a year ago or two. But finally, some common sense was applied. Mm. And
Can I jump in on one? Because you hadn't written this down, but I'm fairly safe in saying you're probably the most politically informed of the four of us here today. So the spate of golfers playing with Trump has, I think, done the game some genuine harm, because it's one of the few golfing stories which does permeate wider sporting consciousness. Those pictures end up in papers, and so Trump with Tiger Woods, with Rory McIlroy. It's not been a great look for the game, I don't think.
I had when I was writing down the notes, and I was going, will I go with Trump? Will I go with Trump? It seems so obvious. It's Trump's presence in golf this year was not quite ubiquitous, but it was all pervasive. And so, like, you're right that, like, all these golfers tripping over themselves to play with him was just, again, tone deaf. I mean, maybe playing to a very limited gallery. But the fact that he showed up at the President's Cup and hands the title to the US team was just preposterous.
First president, the first acting president to do so.
Who could have guessed? What about him standing behind the 16th tee, the par 3 at the Women's US Open at Bedminster, and everyone giving a little curtsy as they were walking past?
Oh my God, these moments were awful. And the fact is that also the timing that the President's Cup took place at the time when the devastation was happening in Puerto Rico, and even though he was tweeting his love for certain people in Puerto Rico and not quite the mayor of San Juan, but this idea that, like, it was just, again, it was like, but he's a wanker, and we all know he's a wanker, so he behaved like a wanker. And I guess the point
three wankers. I mean, do I have to bleep three?
No, I think
you can say what you want.
Okay, it's staying in.
I just forgot
about one of my highlights of the entire year, actually. Sorry for interrupting, Fionn. Electric Picnic, Dave McIntyre, just a couple of Bacardi breezers inside
him. Nothing to do with Golf Weekly, though.
Calls Jerry Gilroy a wanker live on stage and live on air.
Oh.
I didn't realise it was acceptable, but apparently it is.
In no way was that an inaccurate statement, though.
He couldn't sue you for libel.
Sue me for slander, baby, yeah. So listen, we're pretty much out of time, Fionn. Obviously,
the Trilby Tour. Can I just finish sorry, Tiger Woods.
Enough said, right?
You have 40 seconds, Fionn, on the Trilby Tour.
That's the number one highlight. So your sign-off here for Christmas is your Trilby Tour finale.
And I'll tell you why. More interesting, to watch than the Euro Pro Tour and a lot of other golf events, because it's edited beautifully. Yeah. You're watching low handicappers play each shot. It's as close to 99% of golf that we would all like to play. It's not that kind of out-of-reach pro golf.
Yeah.
It's real golf that you think, hey, if I really worked hard, I could hit shots like that. That's why the Trilby Tour was so much fun to watch.
That's fair.
I like any sporting event that you watch on Sky, and the final shot is, if you want to take part in the Trilby Tour next year, call this number now.
Well, listen, lads, on this note, I want to wish you guys a very, very Merry Christmas, and also to everybody listening.
Oh, well, look, you too, Fionn. Have a great Christmas.
Good one, Fionn.
Merry Christmas, Fionn.
Thanks.
We'll all see each other soon. Take it easy, Fionn. Bye. There we are, Fionn Davenport, like a force of nature.
Unstoppable.
What was the word count there?
Tell you what, there's a man who does his research.
He was ready to go on everything.
There's a man who I'd say one of the reasons he isn't in studio as often is that he's realised, what is the point of me making all this effort, doing hours and hours of research, and the lads literally rock in.
Yeah. Well, now he gets his slot via Skype and he gets to just throw it all out there, which is good. I mean, he brought, I would say, some
gravitas
we wouldn't have thought of. An understanding of the wider world.
Well, an understanding of women's workwear that I hadn't previously thought about.
Yeah,
he spent a lot of time thinking about that.
That had passed me by, that story, actually, completely. I didn't even remember.
I didn't realise it was such a big story until Fionn just reminded us.
Well, I'll be talking. I'm wondering now, should I go out and buy a couple of late Christmas presents for my wife and mate? Can you buy skorts anywhere around here? Like, where in Dublin sells skorts?
Well, skorts are what hockey players wear.
Yeah, I think skorts
and
are.
Skorts are what female tennis players wear. Skorts.
Tennis players wear them on the WTA for a long time, but I had no idea. If someone had said, what would you call one of those things?
No, that's
there?
True. I wouldn't know.
It's like a skirt. Idea. It's like a short.
Skirt with Under Armour short things would have been.
Something like that, yes.
So, the year for the Irish then?
Disappointing.
Mm.
Kind of retrieved by Paul Dunne a little.
Yeah. Harrington had his injury troubles. GMAC has kind of come back into a bit of form, or has he? I can never.
What's a bit of form now for GMAC?
Like, keeping his card.
Like, so we're talking about somebody who is in and around the top 100 in the world, rather than somebody who's pushing for
the top 20.
And this has been a slow enough decline for McDowell. You do hope that maybe he can get one more run at it where he wins. Like, he won that, was it the Mayakoba he won?
Two years ago,
which sort of kept his card going and he didn't have to worry about anything too much, but it does feel as though he's fading pretty rapidly.
Like the game is becoming increasingly difficult for him to be competitive.
Too long.
And he's talking about that far more often than he would have done. Mm. He's happy enough for that weakness. Because it's a weakness, and unfortunately he can do nothing about it because you have the powers that you have.
You speak very well about it, though, in that he realised his issue, that he was never going to be able to hit the ball 320 yards, and spoke about looking at Jim Furyk and taking that attitude towards the game where, all right, there's certain courses where I can win and I'll focus on them and I won't get too frustrated. But it seems the way they're going on the PGA Tour that there's fewer and fewer courses that actually suit players that are as short as McDowell.
Yeah.
And like, what if he's looking at the start season going, six courses maybe all year where I can compete and I have to try and peak for those tournaments?
Yeah. Hilton Head. It's a handful.
Well, like Hilton Head is the one you think of every single... Yeah. Like, Luke Donald is going to play well this week.
Yeah.
Brian Gay is going to do well this week.
Harrington had his neck injury, derailed his season, which was frustrating.
He came back playing some very good golf towards the end of the season. It was very competitive in Portugal. And that was the one time you thought he's going to keep this little run going where of a win a year for what would have been his fourth or fifth year in a row, where he'd come up with one kind of a victory between the one in Japan, then through the Honda Classic, Portugal Masters, and possibly doing that again. I would say he looked back on the last 6 months and be taking an awful lot of positives from it.
I'm not surprised anymore to see him in the top 10 in tournaments. You know, there was a period there a couple of years ago, it was like, oh my God, Harrington's actually...
He's going to be 400 in the world.
He's doing okay here. And it was a big surprise.
Yeah.
But now, you kind of, any tournament where you see him having a good week, you're like, okay, that's less of a surprise, and that's great.
He's probably quite happy with that as well, I suspect. That
more consistent.
He would say himself, I'm going to get maybe four chances a year to win.
Mm.
If I get that, I'm fairly confident I'll get one, and a winning year is a winning year, is the way he looks at it.
Yeah, he's in that fight against age to somehow find himself on a major Sunday in contention again. The highlight for him, I'm sure, was Nathan Murphy and I visiting his house. Of course,
that was great. Yeah,
that's the big one.
Well, that would outweigh any number of tour wins.
They'll be talking about that on the 25th around the table in that house.
They will.
Yeah. Do you remember that time the two lads came?
What is that smell? We haven't been able to eradicate.
That was awkward.
They have you as evens that left a mess in that toilet, Nathan, and I'm 3-1.
Like dying for pee from the second I entered the house.
We've
but I'm
had
just
the
so
place
fearful.
Sterilized twice, and we still can't get rid of it.
Potter Carrington.
That was amazing. And that we got to do that. What a man.
Shane Lowry, really, really disappointing year.
He rescued it right at the death.
Yeah, right at the very
end. Not with a win, though.
No, not with a win, but, I mean, Dubai has just transformed his Ryder Cup situation, his ranking situation, and thank God for that, because he felt for a long time he was playing very well. He said he was, and just it wasn't happening for him on the scoreboard, and golf can be so cruel like that. And then right at the death, he goes to Dubai and just tears it up, and that must transform even how he's feeling now.
Like, it seemed as though he had a first 6 months of the year where he felt his game was ticking along nicely and he just needed it all to click.
Yeah.
And then after the Irish Open and the Open where it didn't happen for him, it fell off a little bit of a cliff for 2 or 3 months, probably doing a lot of travelling. During that time, he made the decision that he's going to go and live in America for a little while. And then when he got his head together, had a upturn for that last quarter. I do wonder, and like it'd be impossible to go through the stats as to players who finish 1 year well, can they pick it up easily when we go to Dubai and that in the beginning of February?
Yeah.
Does it continue, or you get back, you relax over Christmas, and suddenly you have to start from the beginning again?
Yeah, it's a fair point. And then, Paul Dunne rescues the season. The playoff defeat to Molinari in Morocco? Was it Morocco?
It was Morocco, wasn't it? Was it the Trophy Hassan?
Yes. And then he comes good.
Where they take all the water from miles around just to have this beautiful looking golf course.
Oh my gosh, it's dreadful. It's the King's Course. Literally, it's never played on for 51 weeks of the year. And the rest of the land outside is all desert and
poverty stricken.
Poverty, yeah. It's a terrible situation. But anyway, that's not our remit for just now. You forget with the British Masters, he shot a 61 on the Sunday.
61 on the Sunday.
That's par 70.
I don't care. And he chips in on 18.
Yeah.
That's how you win a golf tournament.
Rory McIlroy was second.
Yeah.
Wins the British Masters, is on TV. It's a big deal. So, amazing, Paul Dunne. I was talking to him. There was like a thing at Milltown Golf Club. And one thing I didn't know about Dunne, it's like, so way up your game. And he's like, yeah, short game good, solid irons. I didn't realize. So his driving is his big thing. And like, even like to the point where he's always had a bit of wildness in his driving. And even now he's like, I'll stand over a ball on the tee. I won't quite know. I mean, I'll know. There's a good chance it's going to be okay, but there's always a wild one in there. Always. And it's in my head a little bit. So I was kind of saying, right. So if the commentator ever says, Paul Dunne looking very confident here over the driver, he's like, bullshit. Yeah. So that was an interesting insight into Dunne's game. But European Tour winner early doors is a big thing.
Just takes all the pressure off him now, doesn't it?
Yeah.
He doesn't have to worry about cards and exemptions. He can now plot his own schedule, which I'm sure means an awful lot to him, and he can build his entire season around certain tournaments. You would think that that's just going to make him a far better golfer, that he's coming on to 2018 a hugely confident character, like that he really feels he fits in now.
Mm-hmm.
I have very high aspirations for Paul Dunne. I just think he has ticked every single box. He has done everything you would want an amateur turning to a professional to do. He's won his tournaments at the right time. He's got himself to regular top tens, to competing, to winning. He seems to step up every time it's asked. So I wouldn't be surprised if he does go and contend in a major again. Definitely wouldn't be surprised if he pushes towards the Ryder Cup team. He's going to play a lot of European Tour golf next season, whereas more and more of the players are playing that sort of World Tour. There's definitely a good opportunity for him to push on.
Sneak in. That'd be good, yeah. That'd be a big wish for next year to have some Irish players in the Ryder Cup.
But if you were looking at the odds, the list of odds on Irish players playing in this next year's Ryder Cup, I mean, he's probably
second
on the list. I'm not talking about the world list, because you would hope that McIlroy is going to get himself sorted through that. But Lowry, Paul Dunne, Harrington. Is anybody else?
Harrington would probably say himself he'd need to win at least twice.
Yeah,
to give himself.
Well,
Dunne
will need to win at least once.
Yeah,
and be very, very consistent elsewhere.
Right. Is that all the Irish? Graham, Rory. What about
Seamus Power on the PGA Tour?
Oh yeah, we forget about Seamus Power.
Just about managed to stick it in there and hold on. And
yeah,
we've had him on the show a couple of times, and Conor Moriarty is just embarking on his first few weeks on the European Tour, isn't he? So best of luck to him in 2018.
Yeah. Gavin Moynihan.
Yeah, I was on the show recently, Gavin Moynihan. It's good to get some of these guys on, yeah. And then, of course, the overriding finale to the season has been Tiger Woods, and it's legit, Dave. You're the one person who hasn't had their say on the pod on Tiger Woods.
Well, again, what can I say that hasn't been said?
That he's back.
I wasn't reading an awful lot into what happened at the Hero Challenge, but he did beat the likes of Justin Thomas and Dustin Johnson.
The player of the year, the world number one.
Like, for 1 week... You know, you can qualify by saying the tournament didn't mean an awful lot. They're still playing for over $1 million and world ranking points.
And he was under pressure personally.
And his pressure was entirely different to that was been experienced by anybody else in the field. So
he looked fit, didn't he, though? Didn't he look flexible?
Well, he didn't look like the old man
strong.
That you've been banging on about all year since he struggled to bend down and pick up his tee in the Middle East in February.
Yeah.
So that one, that's definitely a major difference. He looked like he was in great nick. Plus, he was able to drive the ball well. And after a couple of really dodgy chips, particularly in the first two rounds, his short game and his chipping in particular seemed to be fine. He held plenty of putts. There weren't many in the field that had more birdies than he had over the 4 days. Uh-oh. So, taken in isolation.
See, once you think about it, you start talking, Dave.
You're talking yourself right up here.
Just in that week, I thought it was great, but I wouldn't be reading any more into it than that, because he has to get through weeks of practice. He has to get through, say, three tournaments in 5 weeks where everybody in the field is really gunning for a win. And then I'll start to, look at it a bit.
Let him win a few majors, and then
if he gets the 17 majors, then I'll take that lad seriously.
Well, as I said on OTBAM a couple of weeks ago, I really hope he doesn't.
I don't get this, and you were agreeing with him. I nearly smashed my TV.
I will
because I didn't believe you. I was like, no, he doesn't know what he's saying.
Yeah,
I believe Dave.
I felt like I got rushed into that a bit. I feel in hindsight like I will cheer Woods all the way up until he wins it, and then when I see him there with the trophy, I'll think, "Yeah, but you're also really not a good person." You know, is that? Can I say that?
I think that's it's almost fair enough. I do think, when he does actually win it, I don't know your emotions, Joe. Yeah. I'm not convinced you will feel that if he actually does go on.
Maybe, but I do somehow, in whatever weird way the brain works, I do separate what I see like on the course, the excitement of Tiger on the course, with the person when he takes off his hat and ages 50 years. For me, that's like he transforms into this horrible person who has done terrible things in his personal life that Dave's alluding to. Really terrible things. And is kind of rude to a lot of people in the media, which I think is needless. And plays golf with Donald Trump. Like, he's been such a letdown in that whole department of his life as well, politically, when he could have been so amazing, iconic. So I see them as two different entities.
I want him to be competitive. I'd love to sit down on Master Sunday and watch Tiger make a charge.
But you want him to lose on the 18th the way Justin Rose did. That's
it doesn't really bother me how he, like, if he misses a two-footer on the last.
Does it depend who he's beaten by? Like, if Charlie Hoffman beats him or if Spieth beats him, it's slightly different.
I would rather see Charlie Hoffman win his first major than Tiger win his 15th.
David Lingmert. Take his point as it's meant.
Well, Lingmert, Hoffman, they might as well be the same person when it comes to this argument.
So you'd want them to beat Tiger?
Yeah. I don't want to see him win another major. He's got 14 of them. There's in any given major field, there's about 40 other guys I'd rather see win it.
Wow.
I'd rather see a European win it. I'd rather see an Irish guy win it.
A European.
I'd rather see a first-time major champion.
Darren Clark. if it's Darren Clark and Tiger going down the stretch.
That's not something we need to worry about in any tournament other than the Open.
Pray for thunder.
And they may well be going down the stretch, but it could be Friday evening and it's a bid for
something
I might may say on Saturday on our live off the ball panel of the year is what I would like to see is Tiger contending against Spieth or Fowler or McIlroy.
I'd love that.
Any of them, just to see. So, like, what does it do for Jordan Spieth for out in the office amongst the average sports fan if he goes down the stretch with Tiger and beats him?
Mm-hmm.
Like, does it elevate him to a new level? Or, like, is this conversation... Like, I do wonder...
They'll all say, oh, well, it's not the Tiger.
I should have asked... Like, I don't remember golf pre-Tiger. Like, is golf now just back to where it was pre-Tiger?
I have that same question. I don't know.
That people have a passing interest in it?
I feel like because of the TV situation and people's attention spans that, like... So you're talking Norman and Faldo as, like, the end of the pre-Tiger. I think people were more into it in the same way that sports like snooker and darts were more popular.
I think so. There was less choice. I didn't watch any more golf when Tiger began to dominate than I did prior to that.
Mm.
But I watched a lot of golf before Tiger turned professional.
It was on more TV. It was around more.
Yeah, I mean, there was far more golf on the BBC at the time, and there was there were some really good names. Plus, the Europeans were all winning majors. It was incredibly exciting at the time.
Lyle and Woosnam.
The Ryder Cup had caught fire between 85 and then up till 97 when Tiger played his first one. So I watched just as much golf pre-Tiger as I did post-Tiger, but I want to really see him compete. I want to see him contend in a major. I just don't want to see him win one.
Well, on that note, Merry Christmas to everyone.
Merry Christmas to you and yours, Joe.
Yeah. Listeners, thanks
have
for...
Have a nice child.
Enjoy the holiday
Christmas.
Season.
Have a quiet Christmas.
I'm sure that's what they're saying in the American Golf Podcast. You enjoy the holidays.
Happy holidays.
What American Golf Podcasts?
Yeah.
I'm sure there must be at least one, is there not?
Not worth listening to.
Well, I never said it was worth listening to.
So thanks as ever, listeners, for all your support and being friends of the pod across the year. It was much appreciated. We have big plans, genuinely, for 2018. So.
We'll announce our winner of our photo. We've had a huge response.
Oh, yeah.
Huge response to our competition for Photo
Actually
Island.
Have, yeah.
So much so that we couldn't properly access the tweets to pick a winner. So that's something to look forward to in 2018.
There's so much to look forward to. But genuine thanks for everything across the year, your tweets and support. And we will see you in the new year.
Go and tell all my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here in Dardanelle, all picket town. Little JD starter kid right here.